You know that specific kind of dread, right? It's 7:00 a.m. on a Monday.
Oh, I know it well.
The coffee hasn't even hit yet, and your phone buzzes. It's the shift supervisor. Three people called out.
And a truck just showed up 4 hours early.
Exactly. And suddenly, your entire production schedule for the week is just hanging by a thread. In that moment, let's be honest, most people think of a temporary staffing agency as basically a panic button.
Absolutely. It's the break glass in case of emergency mindset.
You hit it, you get a warm body to fill a spot, and you just pray they show up.
It's reactive, it's frantic, and it's how the vast majority of the business world views temp labor, a distress purchase. You do it because you failed to plan.
But today we're doing something a little different. We've been going through this stack of documents and white papers from RSS Inc., that's Regional Supplemental Services.
Right.
And they frame this whole conversation in a way I hadn't really considered. They aren't talking about filling seats, they're talking about operational stability. But I have to ask, is that just marketing fluff? I mean, operational stability sounds great, but at the end of the day, isn't it just renting workers?
See, that's where the source material gets really interesting. It challenges that exact skepticism. When you dig into the RSS Inc. data, you realize we aren't just looking at resumes here.
No.
No, we're looking at risk management, cost structures, legal compliance, even economic forecasting. The core argument they make is simple but kind of radical.
Go on.
If you're only using temporary labor as a band-aid, you're actually losing money. It's a sophisticated tool for economic flexibility.
Okay, so the mission for this deep dive is to figure out if that claim holds water. We're going to look at the economics, which are way more complex than just an hourly rate.
Oh, much more.
The legal side, which is full of landmines and the red flags for agency quality. Let's start with the money, because I think most managers see temp labor as just expensive. You pay a markup. How is paying a premium hourly rate a cost-saving strategy?
It comes down to how you classify the expense on your P&L.
Your profit and loss.
Right. The source material draws this really sharp line between two concepts: fixed costs and variable operating expenses.
All right, let's break that down for the non-CFOs listening. Why does that distinction matter on the factory floor?
So, your core team, your full-time permanent employees, that is a fixed cost.
Okay.
Whether demand is through the roof or completely flat, that payroll expense stays the same. You have to pay them, you have benefits, 401ks, insurance, PTO, that number is baked in. It's heavy.
Which is great when business is booming, you want those people there. But it's terrifying when things slow down.
Precisely. And in today's economy, volatility is the norm. That fear of a slowdown makes companies hesitant to hire. They don't want to overcommit to a fixed cost they can't shed easily.
So what RSS Inc. highlights is that a temp agency lets you convert that labor cost.
Into a variable expense. Exactly. You're buying labor capacity only when you actually need it.
So it's like a dimmer switch instead of a simple on-off
The
switch.
perfect analogy. You turn the labor spend up or down to match the revenue coming in.
But what about that markup? The hourly rate is higher.
It is, but the fully loaded cost is often lower. Think about the trauma of scaling up a permanent workforce. You have recruitment costs, interviewing time, background checks.
Drug screens, onboarding friction. It's a huge time sink.
And then, if you have to scale down, you're dealing with severance, morale hits, unemployment claims, maybe even lawsuits.
And the agency absorbs all that friction.
That's the key. The source makes a huge point of this. When you pay that bill rate to an agency, you aren't just paying for the hour of work. You're paying them to absorb turnover risk, administration, payroll processing, benefits exposure, employment taxes, all of it.
So the markup is basically an insurance premium against administrative chaos.
That is a perfect way to put it. It separates the labor access from the employment commitment. That's the golden nugget. You get the hands on deck, but you don't get the long-term liability.
Now, the source material makes a distinction that I think gets glossed over a lot. It compares a temporary workers agency to traditional staffing. I'll be honest, I use those terms interchangeably. Is there actually a functional difference?
A huge difference. And confusing them causes a lot of operational pain.
Yeah.
According to the RSS Inc. data, traditional staffing is usually about permanent placement. It's headhunting.
Right.
The goal is a long-term marriage between the employee and the company.
So the hiring cycle is way longer. They're looking for the one, they want cultural fit, five interviews, personality tests, the whole nine yards.
Exactly. An extended hiring cycle. But a temporary workers agency, in the context RSS Inc. operates, prioritizes workforce continuity, immediate availability.
Their goal isn't to find someone who will retire with you.
No. It's to ensure your production line doesn't stop today.
So if I need a specialized welder for a 6-month project, I go to traditional staffing. If I need 20 people to unload a container that just showed up,
you go to a temp agency. Roughly, yes. And the risk profile is different. In traditional staffing, once that placement is made, the employer usually takes over the risk. In the temporary model, the agency retains the payroll and absorbs the risk. It's built for speed.
Okay, let's talk about those specific environments, because abstract economics are fine, but I want to know what this looks like when the rubber meets the road. Manufacturing, logistics, construction. Let's start with manufacturing. What's the killer scenario there?
In manufacturing, the cardinal sin is line stoppage.
The silence on the factory floor.
It's the most expensive sound in the world. If you're short on people, the machines stop. But the overhead rent, electricity depreciation on those million-dollar machines, that doesn't stop.
And RSS Inc. positions itself for these high-stakes environments.
Exactly.
The source also mentions overtime inflation. I assume that means if you don't bring in temps, you're just burning out your core team.
That's it. If you try to cover a 20% surge in demand just by asking your current staff to work harder, you end up paying time and a half or double time. Your margins get crushed.
Yeah.
And eventually, your best people quit.
Okay, what about logistics and distribution? Warehouses, fulfillment centers? I feel like that's where everyone assumes temps go.
True, but the dynamic is specific. The key word is variability.
Variability.
In a warehouse, you are at the mercy of factors you often can't control. Inbound volumes, carrier schedules, seasonal rushes.
Right. A truck shows up 3 hours late, or a supplier drops 3 times the volume you expected.
And if you don't process it, you get hit with detention charges, demurrage fees, missed SLAs with your customers. Temp labor acts as a shock absorber. They handle the picking, packing, dock support.
It's like the suspension on a car. You don't want the passengers, your core business, to feel every pothole.
The temps take the bumps. That's it.
And then there's construction. That seems trickier to me because of the skill level required.
True. But construction is incredibly sensitive to external factors. Weather. Permitting delays.
Oh, yeah.
The source material emphasizes schedule elasticity.
Meaning what?
Meaning you can't pay a full crew to stand around and watch it rain for 3 days. That kills your budget. But when the rain stops, you are now 3 days behind schedule and facing liquidated damages.
You need to surge. You need to double the workforce for a week to catch up.
Exactly. Temp labor lets you scale up to recover the timeline without having to hire permanent guys you won't need next month.
Okay, the source mentions RSS Inc. views itself as an extension of operational leadership, not a transactional broker. Now that sounds like marketing speak. Does it mean anything in practice?
It implies a deeper integration. It means they aren't just sending bodies. They're looking at your production goals. But to do that, you have to understand the legal structure. And this is where I want to slow down, because the source has some serious warnings.
Employer of record and co-employment. This is the stuff that gets managers sued, isn't it?
This is what keeps HR directors up at night.
So let's get legal. Employer of record. Who is that?
In a temporary arrangement, the agency is the employer of record. This is crucial.
Okay.
They handle the tax withholding, workers' comp, Social Security, all the administrative heavy lifting. They issue the W-2.
But I'm the one on the factory floor telling them what to do. Move this box to that pallet.
You're directing the day-to-day work results. But, and this is a huge but, you have to be careful about co-employment risk.
I've heard this term. It's that gray area where the government decides you are also the employer.
Correct. And therefore liable for benefits and taxes. The source warns that risk arises when the client, that's you, starts acting too much like the direct employer on HR matters.
Give me a concrete example. What's something a manager might say that accidentally triggers this?
Okay, let's say a temp shows up late. If you, the manager, pulls them aside and say, if you're late again, I'm firing you. You have just stepped into the danger zone.
Because firing is an employer action.
Exactly. You don't fire a temp, you end the assignment. It sounds like semantics, but legally, it's a massive difference. The source says all discipline, pay negotiations, status decisions must route through the agency.
So if I have an issue, I call my agency rep. I say, hey, this person isn't working out. Please replace them. I don't do the termination.
Precisely. The agency is your firewall. If you start handling it informally on the floor, you might be accidentally assuming liability.
That makes sense. Keep the lines clear. What about classification? W-2 versus 1099. We hear about the gig economy. Can't I just get independent contractors?
RSS Inc. is very, very clear on this. For supervised, scheduled, operational work, you want W-2 employees.
Why? 1099 seems cheaper. No taxes, no benefits.
It's cheaper until you get audited. It's all about misclassification risk. If you control their schedule, provide the tools, and supervise their methods, the IRS says they are employees, not contractors.
So if I say be here at 8 a.m., wear these boots, and use this machine, they aren't independent.
Not even close. If you classify them as 1099s to save a buck, and the government disagrees, the penalties are severe. Back taxes, fines. It can bankrupt a small operation.
Got it. So the agency employs them on a W-2, handles the taxes, and we just pay the invoice. Cleaner, safer.
Much cleaner.
But here's the million-dollar question. Not all agencies are created equal. We've all dealt with agencies that just send whoever walked in the door 5 minutes ago. The source talks about readiness versus volume.
Yeah.
How do we tell the difference?
This is the difference between a partner and a body shop. The source lists a checklist, and honestly, every listener who hires labor should print this out.
Okay, let's run through the big ones. What should we be demanding?
First is screening rigor. Is it a documented, repeatable process? Are they actually drug screening, checking background?
And don't just take their word for it. The source implies you should audit them.
Right. Ask specific questions. What panel drug screen do you use? Is it 5-panel, 10-panel? How far back does the background check go? If they stumble on these answers, they aren't really checking.
Another one that stood out was response speed, specifically regarding no-shows.
This is vital. If a temp doesn't show up at 6 a.m., how fast can they get a replacement there? Do they have a ready pool of pre-screened people, or are they starting from scratch posting on Facebook when you call?
And then there's safety. The source says the agency needs to embed safety expectations before the worker arrives. Why is that their job? Isn't it mine as the site manager?
It's both. But think about your safety culture. It's fragile. If you bring in 10 temps who have never worn PPE and don't understand lockout to gout, you can erode your safety culture in a single shift.
That's a terrifying thought.
Your permanent guys see the temps cutting corners, and then they start cutting corners. It's the contagion of bad habits.
I love the list of questions the source provides, this interrogation list. Listeners, write these down. Number one, how do you verify skills?
And don't just let them say, we check. Mm-hmm. Ask how. Do they use testing software? A practical test on a forklift.
Number two, who do we call at 2 a.m. for a replacement?
If the answer is leave a voicemail, you run away. Manufacturing is 2004-7. Your support needs to be too.
And number three, what is your worker's comp responsibility? Make them define it.
These questions force them to prove they have an operational backbone, not just a sales team.
Now, let's pivot to strategy. There's a nuance here between temp and temp to hire. The source calls temp to hire a structured audition.
That's a great way to put it. You can't always tell if someone is a good fit from an interview.
Right.
Resumes don't tell you if someone has the stamina for an 8-hour shift on the loading dock.
So temp to hire lets you bring them in, see if they show up on time, see how they work with the team, and then commit. It's dating before marriage.
Exactly. But pure temp is different. That's for when the demand itself is variable. You aren't auditioning them for a permanent role because the role itself might disappear in 3 months.
The source also drops a massive red flag warning. It says if you are chronically dependent on temporary staff for the same role without improvement, you have a problem.
This is the diagnostic part, and it hurts to hear. If you're churning through temps in the same position over and over, stop laying in the temp.
Ouch. It's not them. It's me.
It's you. You need to look in the mirror. Is the shift structure causing burnout? Is the pay misaligned with the market? Is the supervision poor?
Right. If you've gone through 50 people in one spot, the problem isn't the people, it's the spot.
Exactly. The source calls this separating volatility from dysfunction. Use temps for volatility market spikes, seasonal rushes, but don't use temps to patch over internal dysfunction.
That's a powerful distinction. Volatility versus dysfunction.
And this leads to the final concept, workforce resilience. The source suggests that using multiple labor channels, your permanent team plus a temp agency, creates redundancy.
Like having a backup generator.
Yes. Imagine a flu bug wipes out 20% of your permanent staff in 1 week. If you don't have an agency relationship already established, you are dead in the water.
So, bringing this all together, we started with the panic button. But what we're seeing from the RSS Inc. material is that a temporary workers agency is really a financial and operational buffer.
It's about converting fixed cost to variable cost, mm-hmm. absorbing administrative friction. and maintaining throughput when the world gets chaotic.
But only if you pick the right one.
Right. You have to ask the hard questions about safety, screening, and compliance. Treat them like an operational partner, not a vendor you call when you're desperate.
And you have to respect that legal line between client and employer of record.
Keep the lines clean, absolutely.
So next time you're staring at that production schedule and sweating about the numbers, don't just think about filling holes. Think about buying flexibility.
And remember, the goal isn't just to survive the shift. It's to build a system that can handle whatever the market throws at you.
Here is a final thought to chew on, something that really struck me. We always talk about temporary labor as being unstable or transient. We think of the permanent staff as the rock, the foundation.
Sure, that's the conventional wisdom.
But it used correctly. If the temps are the ones absorbing the overtime spikes, the seasonal crunches, the layoffs, the market shocks, could it be that the temporary workforce is actually the only thing that guarantees the stability of your permanent team?
That is a fascinating way to look at it. The buffer protects the core. If you don't have the buffer, the core takes the hit.
Exactly. The instability of the temps creates the stability for the perms. Something to think about. That's it for this deep dive. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.